Welcome to another edition of the Let's Go Ricky Roll podcast. I'm Dr. Duran alongside Ricky Romero, former Blue Jay pitcher and former big league catcher Josh Toley. Thank you as always for listening, for joining us and interacting with us, especially on the Instagram, the Let's Go Ricky Roll Instagram page, where people got their stickers, they're happy about it. And you know what, Toley, I know you're the rich guy here, so I'm going to start invoicing you for all the stamps that I'm sending to Canada. It's three stamps to go to Canada.
Hey, those are rich people. They booed me for a while.
You got booed in Canada?
Oh, please. Chasing knuckleballs back to the backstop? Holy shit.
Because it's really easy to do it, right?
Yeah.
It's really easy.
Yeah. Today's guest actually joining us right now is Dustin Garneau, a catcher with the Detroit Tigers, jumping on it with us right now. And there he is, Dustin Garneau. Welcome to the podcast, Dustin, as he's trying to figure things out, get it all set up. There it is.
How's it going?
Hi, Dustin. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Dustin, real quick, can you turn your phone sideways? That'll help us out.
Yep, no problem.
Where are you guys at, Dustin?
Minnesota. Got in last night.
Ooh, love that city. Yeah.
It's a cool city, but it is freezing right now.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
No better place to go than Sneaky Pete's on your way home from the ballpark. Just remember that.
Absolutely.
What is that, Tully? Come on now. Don't look. What's Sneaky Pete's?
Oh, Sneaky Pete's.
Just a local watering hole. That's it.
Yeah.
A couple pops on the way home, and we're good.
Hey, Minnesota is a sneaky city, man. It really is. It's awesome. And that stadium is probably one of my favorites. I don't know if you guys would agree with that, but it's beautiful, man. That stadium, when we were there the first year that it opened, and I was like, damn, a lot different than the fucking shitty ass Metrodome, that's for sure.
Ricky
cool.
Likes it.
It feels cool because it's like right on top of you. All the fans are on top of you, and I like how the outfit walls are. It's really cool.
Yeah,
Ricky likes it because it's a graveyard to center field. Ooh, and you got to hit it about two miles in the air to right field.
Not so much left sides.
Yeah.
Big league catcher Dustin Garneau is today's guest. He's with the Detroit Tigers. You've seen him in a Rockies uniform. You've seen him in an Angels uniform. You've seen him in a Cal State Fullerton uniform and a San Pedro local. So that's really cool. Thank you for joining us, Dustin. But before we get going, you know, Toley said, I can't wait till Dustin comes on because I'm going to start the show off right now. Now, do you know anything about Josh Toley? He's a former catcher, recently retired, and he still brings it. So, Toley, we're going to let you start off the show with it right now. Go ahead. You said you wanted a minute to start of the show.
I just need 1 minute because, Dustin, every time we have a guest on here, guess what position they play?
Catcher or not catcher?
Yeah, of course. No, of course the catchers. We always bring the catchers on. For multitude of reasons. So thanks for coming on. This is freaking awesome.
You know why? You know why? Because it always feels good for me to be the best athlete on this podcast. Oh. That's why we're bringing it.
We're losing, Dustin. We're losing credibility by the day. By the day, we lose credibility with Rick.
He's a left-handed pitcher, man. It's about as far as an athlete as you get.
I didn't say it this time, Rick. I didn't say it this time.
Oh, man. Jesus. Dustin's coming on strong. This is what we like. And, Dustin, we know you've been on a bunch of different podcasts. And they're very professional. We're professional to an extent. But we don't care about any of that stuff. It's just talking. Like, if you're in the clubhouse having out, you should have heard. We'll send you the link when Troy Tulowitzki came on and just – ripped totally for 45 minutes, and all we did was say hello, and he went back and forth with us. So that's the kind of deal we have. Oh, yeah, it's good stuff, man. So we just have a lot of fun with the podcast, and we just get going. Like, we don't care about what your opinion of Angel Hernandez is, because that was last week's episode.
You're in the middle of it.
Good receiving numbers when you play in front of them.
You're damn right. That's all that matters.
There you go. No, yeah, because we were talking about it last week, and we were saying how, you know, people make it seem like it's an easy-ass job to call balls and strikes and stuff like that, and actually, like, how it's easy to criticize the guy that missed a lot of pitches in the zone, but yet we've been following that I don't know if you follow that Twitter page where it grades the umpires, and, dude, a lot of them are more than above average, and it's like nobody talks about that, and it's like they wait for the one umpire that fucks up, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we need robo-arms right away, and it's like, dude, like, just like a hitter, a catcher, a pitcher, they have a bad day too, and it's just it just happens. And, you know, Dustin, you came from Cal State Fullerton, our alma mater where I came from too. And what we were taught was always next pitch. As cliche as it sounds, it's like, you know what? We're not going to let one pitch fuck up our at bat or fuck up our game. We're going to go out there and grind out the at bat. If we get a strike against us, so what? We move on to the next pitch. Talk to us a little bit about that for you being behind the plate and obviously as a hitter.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest push for the fans, at least, because they can see, and it's obviously been an Angel, whenever he's back there, he's going to be most criticized when he misses these big pitches, to bring in the robo ump and all that kind of stuff, which being a catcher, I'm not going to be for it, obviously, for most reasons. But the aspect that you watch a lot of guys, especially in the big leagues, where one pitch can flip in a bat, even if it's strike one, and they strike out, and it's straight motherfucking the umpire, like, you ruined my at bat. It's like, nah, he really didn't, because you swung at the two balls in the dirt after that. So there has to be some give and take, to where it's like, okay, he misses a pitch, yeah, it looks horrible, but that doesn't dictate, to the most part, the whole fucking at bat for guys throwing it away for them.
That's what I always say is, like, you're 100% right, is we get hung up on just the one pitch, right? So you just take the Schwarber at bat. I know Angel was bad the other night, and I don't want to touch too much on it, but, like, strike three was a ball, clearly, but the other pitches, in fact, he didn't get wrong. So it's like you can't just blow up every time, but consistency, obviously, as catchers is what we strive on, is, like, we just need to know the strike zone. You can't be all over the place, because otherwise we can't call the game properly.
Especially for us, like, if I get screwed in a bat, most often I'm not going to say anything, unless it's, like, obviously a big part of the game, or if it's going to run the scoring position, I might ask him or something. But for the most part, if he balls or calls a strike a ball or vice versa, I want that for my guy. So I'm not going to – definitely not going to scream at him or yell at him. I'm going to at least talk to him and ask where he had it and kind of go from there, because on the flip side, when I'm catching, I want the same damn call. So for me to scream at him and say something, it's going to dictate my inning when I'm catching in front of him too.
Yeah. And do you ever let him know, Dustin, if you punch out on a pitch that you thought it was a ball, do you come back, instead of saying something, do you wait till you throw on your equipment and you come and catch and start catching and say, hey man, I need that for my pitcher too?
Yeah, now it's usually – after I'll throw down, you'll probably get about 30 seconds between your throw down and the first batter of the inning, to where you can turn around and kind of discuss what happened or talk to them and get a feel like, hey, I had a down. You haven't been calling all game. Is that where you're going to be? And you got to – I've come to the realization, if I can make them laugh about it, it makes them easier to be approachable. But if you come at it, like, especially some of these older guys, you come at them like, what the hell was that? Then it's going to be a long game for you to deal with them.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what, exactly, I love? Right. I love Noah Syndergaard's tweet too. Right after that game, I'm here for Angel Hernandez strike zone forever.
Yeah,
that's one way to do it.
And last week's episode, we got into a conversation. It was just more about, like, just in general about umpires. Then also it led to 45. And Tolly was giving some great stories about that, how to finesse an umpire, how to work it. And it was just the conversations going back and forth. That's why we're touching on it right now. We found that Twitter account, Ump Scorecards, where you go back and you rate it. And, you know, some guys were like 98% or they're only missing one. But then again, on Sunday Night Baseball, when you have Angel Hernandez, and then you have the one fan yelling at him outside of the stadium that John Boy puts out there. And it's like, okay, obviously it gets – like, Dustin, you grew up at what, Eastview Little League, where everybody was, like, yelling at the umpires no matter what. And, like, it's like everybody's mom is on the field and everybody can do it, right? And I sent a tweet out just saying, hey, it's very hard to do. And people are like, oh, it's not. It's easy. And that's why I'm glad we're having you on today. Like, let's ask you this. How hard is it just to catch 100 miles an hour right now?
If it's straight, it's okay. But guys are throwing these 100-mile-an-hour cutters or sinkers, and that's where it gets fucked. Like, that's not fun to catch.
Now, and how hard is it to, like, say it's a strike?
Exactly. For me, like, to be on the umpire side, to be able to – like, there's guys in the big leagues now who are getting jobs based solely on framing numbers. So you're talking about guys getting in an industry getting paid millions and millions of dollars to be elite with their hands to fool umpires, and you're expecting the umpires to see 200-plus pitches a night. And they're going to miss six of them. And that's probably around 95 or so percent. And then you're going to motherfuck them for one big, big miss out of the zone. It's like, dude, like, these guys, like, me, not so much. But, like, you watch guys who, like, Jefferson and I from Minnesota, He's got very good hands. He's the best receiver right now as far as metric wise. And like, these guys are paid to make the umpire miss, and for them still to get 98%+, and obviously you can't.
Where'd it go?
Your audio went off. Hello? Can you hear?
Uh-oh. You hear me, Rick?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Can Josh hear us?
I can hear everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's see here. So there's an echo there.
You had one job, dude. Should we hang up and come back?
Let's see here. All right.
So Dustin's gone.
Ricky's gone.
Tolly, you're still there? Yeah, too much feedback.
Here we go. Justin. Justin. Oh, we're going to figure this out. My microphone is off. Everybody back? We're good? Oh, man. Hold on here. What happened there?
Okay. What happened, dude?
I don't know.
Can Josh hear us?
He was telling a great story, too.
Yeah.
Damn.
That was a good story. So we're still here. Ricky, you're good?
Yeah, I'm good, dude.
All right. Let's see if it was here. Okay, so Josh is there. All right, I'm here. Bethel's here. Ricky's here. And I think that...
Was it him or was it us?
I think it was him. And Dustin back?
Gotcha.
There we go.
Yeah, man, what the hell did happen right there?
Hey, see, start talking about Angel Hernandez and they come and get you.
I think it's too damn cold outside here.
Yes, that big league Wi-Fi isn't very good, man.
Yeah, I pay for the good stuff, too.
It's Minnesota, man. It's Minnesota.
Man.
All right, so we got it there. We're good. You were saying, but anyway, we'll move on. You know, I like this. And people probably don't know this. There's guys. You were talking about the framing metrics. What is that? Speak English to me.
So nowadays, like it's basically every pitch that's thrown through the zone, like you see in the box. There, we get put on a computer, basically TrackMan and Hawkeye and all these systems to grade on every pitch that's thrown through the zone has a percentage of being called a strike or a ball. And throughout the game, your percentage goes up and down, based on how many balls or strikes you catch the right way. And throughout the game, it's either like you're going to get plus a score or minus a score, you're going to be even. And over a season, the guys who are better or worse are considered better receivers or not. And that's where, until obviously the RoboUmp comes in, the guys are going to get are getting contracts on based on how good their receiving numbers are.
What?
Gun to your head right now, Dustin, the ABS system, if they come around and pull every player, how do you vote for the automated balls and strikes system? What's your take on it?
I'm going to say.
Oh, they got him again.
We good?
Yeah, there you go. They heard you, man. The union heard you.
No, my buddy called me right now. No, I went down to Lakeland last year. I got hurt, and I actually caught on the RoboUmp that they had down that low A system. And as a hitter, they're going to love it. Because it shrinks east to west dramatically. North, south, it gets kind of wonky based on the heights of the players and stuff. But as far as receiving on it, I don't want any part of it.
Wow.
Yeah. Dude, you lose the relationship. You lose the relationship piece. Like, you're good at what you do, Dustin, because you know how to deal with the personalities of each individual umpire, which goes back to the original topic. That was one of my favorite things to do when I would catch, is to have that relationship. And like you said, you can jockey guys to your point about your at bat. You know how to navigate the at bat. It's not about Dustin's at bat. It's actually about the guy on the mound. And it's such a thankless job, but like that is the most important thing, and they can't measure it. So it doesn't matter to anybody.
Yeah, exactly. There's a big, like, obviously, if it's going to change the catching position, they go to robo-ump, they're going to put more of the hitters behind the plate, and I think that's going to change for the bad, for especially for pitchers to throw into guys who I'm not going to badmouth players as catchers wise, but guys who aren't as elite as they should be behind the dish compared to just having the guys who can bang back there kind of deal.
Well, yeah. But then it goes to the other topics of, like, I don't know. I know a lot of teams obviously do all the scouting reports with the wristbands, and some people are going to, like, the electronical thing on the knee that they're, I don't know about all that, but, like, they don't even, like, you don't even have to study for a game anymore, like you did in the past. So it's like, you can kind of just have to stop the baseball at this point and teach a guy how to block and then just go hit homers. And then you have your ideal catcher if this system comes into play.
Yeah, that's another way of devaluing the position, because obviously people don't realize, like, catching is one of the most, one of the most underpaid positions is on the field compared to any other position, maybe to a quote, maybe towards a middle reliever also. They're pretty underpaid. But because they can do that is that they don't really put an emphasis on the catching aspect. They say, we can give you a scouting report if you can keep the ball in the zone, and you can navigate yourself through the game based on what the information that we can give you. And I think there's a lot of lost aspect of pitcher-catcher rapport, catcher-umpire rapport, and the guy just who can just read swings in the box and not just put down fastball, slider, changeup, curveball. Here we go. So we'll try to navigate a big league lineup like that. So I think it's just another way to devalue the position and just go towards more of an offensive approach for it.
Damn, this is crazy. Yeah, like, catching has changed, Rick. It's crazy now.
Yeah. And the beauty of it, like they mentioned, the relationship between pitcher and catcher, it's all about getting a feel for what your pitcher has that day. You can have all the data in front of you and say, Miggy Cabrera doesn't hit a curveball very well. Well, what if your starter doesn't have a curveball? Then you have to be able to navigate him through the first 3, 4, 5 innings till he finds his curveball and pick your spots on. You know, for me, I was a guy that sometimes my curveball wasn't working from the first inning, second inning, but we found positions or spots to throw it in 0-0, 0-1 till you find it. But you have to be able to navigate, and you rely a lot on your catcher. And that's why these guys are so good at what they do. They're thinkers. They're sitting there doing all the thinking for you. That's why, you know, I mean, my respects to all catchers, because they're pretty damn smart. You know, they know how to navigate through a game, through a big league game, and be able to have the trust, or help you build the trust on the mound to say, okay, I trust you to throw this pitch now. I feel like you've gotten a feel for it in the fifth, sixth inning. Now I've gotten you into the sixth inning. Now let's work. And that's the beauty of the relationship between a pitcher and a catcher.
There's also a subtle thing where you can pick up, say, a person in the lineup, or you can throw a curveball and he's not going to clip you for it. Maybe you'll hit a single, or it'll be, you give yourself more of a chance to get an out, to get a feel for that pitch. Or I just caught a kid's debut for us the other day, and he didn't realize it, but he kept shaking to one certain pitch, one certain area. And for me, I'm sure Tolly would say the same thing. It's like, it's very uncomfortable 5 or 6 times in a row when you keep shaking the same spot. I'm like, dude, these fuckers know it too. Like, they're going to start diving on you. And I brought him, like, in the third inning and told him, I was like, where do you keep shaking? He's like, I have no idea. I was like, you keep shaking this one spot. We got to get some fake shakes in there for other pitches, or get you to shake to another pitch, because, like, these guys, they're humans in the box, and they're going to start fucking this pitch up on you if you keep doing it.
And big league hitters are freaking smart, man. They pick up on anything. This young buck's on the mound making his debut, and he keeps shaking to a fastball away. All right, we're going to take him the other way. And next thing you know, they don't care how hard you throw. It can be 98, it can be 99, it can be 100. But if you keep shaking to the same spot, the big league hitters will make you pay quick too.
This is crazy, man. This is crazy. Like, to hear it, because totally, you were 2 years ago, you were in the Yankees organization and catching, and it just seems like the game has evolved in that position so much in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's evolved. But, like, that information that we were just talking about, people have no idea how intricate, and, like, that's how hard this game is, but that's how a big league hitter looks, watches the game and watches the hitters in front of him. And how is the pitcher shaking? Does he always throw 1-1 breaking balls? And you're right. That's, like, the young pitchers, they're lost because of that reason. And like, this is where I believe, and I push for the veteran catcher, because you get a young catcher back there that has no idea. They don't know. They're all doing the same exact thing. He's going to say, yeah, good idea. Keep going fastball down and away when you shake. Like, this is where, like, I've gone on a rant. I've gone on rants because of this reason alone. Like, this is the value of a veteran guy that has been around and has seen it and has been beat multiple times when you're younger, because we've all done it. We've all made these mistakes. But teams don't value the veteran guy as much. Like you said, it's all about how many strikes can we steal and whatnot. And we don't care about anything else. But like that, to the people listening, that's what's important. That piece right there.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
No,
yeah, and it's true. I'm not gonna badmouth the front office guys or anything, because they do help a ton. Like the information they can give us, like especially to get through like how hard big league hitters are, especially if you're like we're gonna see Minnesota tonight, who's been raking, and we're gonna see the Dodgers right after. So the more information I can definitely get, the better it is. But I think that's the way they can't quantify the gut feeling in a game where the reaction of a swing or a take from a hitter is where they can say like, well, it doesn't really matter because you can't. There's no intangible to that, which I as catching like that. That's probably the biggest aspect of a game for me is knowing what my pitcher has and knowing what they're looking like against certain pitches and takes and swings and stuff like that, get through it.
Man, this is cool.
And it's true what he's saying. It's true what he's saying. We're not here bad-mouthing the data. It's important to have the data. It's awesome that we have that data in front of us. I mean, it's obviously evolved from when I was last in the big leagues in 13. You know, it's evolved so much. But at the same time, there's still a relationship, like I mentioned earlier, between the pitcher and catcher that's important, and only them to know what they have in each other that night. And it just... it's just, you go off the field and what you see. But, again, data is important. And having all that data is cool, you know, having all those cameras and numbers and stuff like that. It's just knowing what to do with them, obviously.
And Dustin, you're an interesting case because you're 34 now and you came up when you were 27 as a pro. You've seen this technology. You've had to adapt with it, where some of the younger catchers, this is all they know, right? So – I don't cover baseball anymore as much as I used to back in the day, but what is going on with you guys have a wristband now that guys can communicate? Is that what you're talking about, Tolly, where you have a wireless system giving signs? Is that what's going on?
Some teams use those wireless system, but there's a lot of teams that are still like, I say it's old school, but it's like the wristband and it navigates you through the lineups ahead, behind, evens. I don't know. And that's not information really to share, but the system, I'm curious about the different systems.
You guys use that, Dustin?
We haven't used it. Every team has it, so it's basically up to the team if you want to use it. So it's like, I think it's called PitchCom, but it's basically a little board about this big, and it has 8 to 10 buttons on it, and then you can push. Basically, you can program it however you want it for what button is for what pitch. And you click the button, and they have the speaker that you see in the side of their hat, and it says fastball away, fastball up away, slider away, slider back door. And you basically can do it so you don't have to do any signs. I think we racked it too quick in spring training without really experimenting it, because when they first brought it to our attention, it's like, fuck that. I don't want to be pushing buttons and worry about all this crap.
I'm with you, buddy.
But now when you start playing the bigger teams who like are very good at stealing signs at second base off the catchers or even off the pitchers, I kind of think we should have at least messed toy with it in that aspect, to where we don't even have to put signs down. They can throw.
Really?
Are you guys – would you think that would be something hard to adapt to in like mid-season? I mean, it's not mid-season. It's still early. But like is this – I mean, I feel like this has to be done in spring training to have it really buttoned up.
Yeah, that's what it's definitely should have been done in spring training to really get it going. That's where we saw most teams using it, and the teams that are using it now that used it then. We're going to try – I think we're just going to mess around with it in bullpens to see if guys like it or not. But I think it's – I'm kind of on the fence both ways. I understand the aspect of not putting signs down, not having to worry about that. It kind of takes your load off your shoulders and worry about switching sign systems and all that kind of stuff and having the flow of the game be interrupted. But at the same point, like we watch when the crowds get crazy, or we saw with the White Sox, it shut down twice. They couldn't even hear it. Yeah. So it was a minute long in between pitches. Like, it's like, where do you want that to happen or not? Because if it's 9-3-2, we got to step off and say, this fucking thing in my ear is not working. Like, that's not.
Yeah. Oh, now we got to go back to signs, right? Like, like, so let me put this into layman's terms. Let me put this into layman's terms. What he's saying is the pitchers, he likes the idea because the pitchers are not, most pitchers are not that smart to figure out different sign sequences. That's what he really was trying to say. I'll just say it for you, Dustin. All right.
I never said it.
Because you are right. You are right. It's stressful. And then you get some of these dummies on the mound who can't figure out multiple sign sequences. And you're like, what? You just go out and rack up three pitches. All right. First pitch, heater in. Next pitch, slider down and away. Next pitch, throw one under his chin. And then go out and do it all over again. But, well, to your point, Dustin, I don't feel as if I would be engaged in the game as much. I would be more worried about that piece of like, holy shit, did I hit the right button? Does it give the catcher feedback too? So when you push it, do you hear it in your ear or since you're controlling it?
I think you can have it. From what I understand, you're allowed either four total or four on the field. It's like the middle infielders can have it too, the pitcher. And then, because I would like to have it if we would use it in my ear, if I want to go fastball away and I throw a fucking knuckleball down there. Oh, no.
I mean, yeah, I feel like that can easily happen for you guys. You guys get so locked in on the game that you were just like, you know, adrenaline, crowd, everything, and you're like, boom, and you're like, oh, wait, what pitch did I call again? Like, it can easily happen. It and I saw it with the Blue Jays this weekend too. In Houston, it got loud and one of the pitchers came in and he couldn't, it didn't work. So they stopped the game. It took about 3-4 minutes. It seemed like it felt like half an hour. The middle infielder had to run in, give the pitcher the piece, and off we go. But again, people think that technology is the answer to speeding up this and doing this and you know, let's make it quicker. But technology can fail at any point too. And now we're stuck. Like you guys mentioned, with signs, and they, yeah, some guys do struggle with multiple signs, and next thing you know, the catcher's back there wondering what the fuck is this guy gonna throw, and did he get the right sign, and you know, am I gonna get crossed up, and all that stuff that goes through a catcher's head. And I'll tell you what, these two perfect guys, ask them how bad it is to get crossed up. It's horrible. It feels awful when you do it as a pitcher, and you're just like, God, I mean, this guy just wore one off the chest at like 94 because he was sitting curveball.
and every pitcher should feel bad because we're never wrong. They got the sign wrong. Even when we're wrong, we're still right. Just remember that, boys.
I think next year, because they're going to implement the stop clock or pitch clock next year, and I think that it's going to force the hand of every team to have to do the pitch calm, because the one thing I have noticed for the teams that do use it, as a batter, as I'm stepping in, the pitchers are already ready, rocking, ready to fucking go. So now, it's sped up a ton. So I think with the clock, it's going to kind of force everybody to get going that aspect of it.
I just, you know what? Again, the pitch clock thing, like, pitching is an art, man. Sometimes you have to think, and sometimes you're not on, like, what, it's good. The pitch clock is good when you have your A game and you're going out there and you're like, bam, 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 bam. You're hitting every spot. You're getting quick outs. But there's some games where you get through 5-6 and it's a grind and you need every single second possible to kind of mentally regroup on the mound.
Between innings. That's why they're going to use it.
Yeah.
Getting ready.
And like a Roy Halladay would love it. You know, this, he didn't need it, you know, because he was so fast and he just up there and diced you up. But like certain games, you just have to be able to navigate that starter or that reliever through an inning. And if you're going to implement this whole pitch clock thing, it's like, I mean, baseball is not, I think I saw Derek Holland the other day. If you want to watch something fast, go watch NASCAR. You know, that's what you know? What was that?
He's a beautiful human being.
He's something.
That's awesome.
He's something.
And it's true, man. Like, if a game ends in 2:45 rather than three hours, like 15 minutes, like you come to enjoy the game, watch the game, and
not anymore, Rick. I told you that not anymore. Now it's like, hurry up, let's get out of here.
But
wait till the bases get bigger. Fuck, hell, we can only throw out about 25% of the runners anyways. Now we're going to let them lead off further and be in the second sooner? Like, Fuck off. No.
They're trying everything for, especially with their now in the minor leagues, you're allowed to only throw over two or three times in a row before it's called a balk on you. So that they want stealing, they want all this stuff. And it's like, as stealing goes up, robo umpire comes in, I'm just gonna say, fuck it, I'm done. This is over. I'm over with this.
Yeah, that's right. I quit. You guys win.
I love this conversation because you're giving us all kinds of information that we've never really thought about. What's up with the one knee? When we were kids, it used to be everybody wanted to be Tony Pena, and it was like, don't do it. Now every team does it. Like, why?
So that's goes on the aspect of the receiving metrics and stuff. They put so much emphasis on catching the baseball. I'm not going to bash anybody who does it or not. It's just I don't do it, but getting as low as you possibly can is definitely going to help you receive the bottom of the zone better. So that's the translation of the why people go down on the left knee or the right knee or however it goes. Where I get a little lost on it, guys have actually gotten better this year and last year, but the throwing aspect and then blocking to your lateral, like side to side, especially balls that are yanked, can get a little dicey with that.
Yeah, well, you run out of room. There's no question, right? So just a little bit, Dustin, I was with the Dodgers in 19, went with my left knee down, didn't know anything about it. I just learned it, said hell with it, left knee down, and then guys get in on base or two strikes, I would get into a conventional secondary. And then in 2020, I went to the Yankees, and that was like right knee down. Tanner Swanson came in, and he was going to – this is what we were going to do. And I knew I was kind of on my way out, but I just spent a ton of time learning because I felt the same way. Like, I don't know if this works. And I caught the first game of spring training against the Blue Jays, and I told Tanner Swanson, like, I'm not ready for this. I need to, like, just let me catch how I've caught. And they said, no, just try it. It's spring training. You'll be fine. Well, it's a damn track meet on the baseball field. Now, I'll say that. With that being said, though, like, I've learned the mechanics of the throwing. But, yes, you're right. When the ball gets outside of the box blocking, it's freaking hard. If you're not, like, mechanically sound, like, set up properly, you're not going to get, like, balls that are away, you're going to have a hard time blocking. But the receiving aspect of it, it made receiving so much easier for me.
Really?
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, that's the aspect everybody really cares about. There's some teams or effort where they don't really care about anything else besides receiving the baseball. Throwing and blocking is kind of secondary, which is – I can't be sold on that because 90 feet in the big leagues is a big damn deal, man, especially when you get from first to second base. It's a huge deal to just say it where we don't put the aspect of, like, keeping guys – closer to home plate, at least. Like, I can't buy into that yet.
Yeah.
No, and there's also beauty in watching catchers who can block the shit out of it, man. And it takes a lot of, you know, there's times where a pitcher, you know, you can be 1-2 with a man on third base, and you have to trust the catcher that he's going to block that nasty off speed pitch or breaking ball that you're going to throw. And that's why there's beauty in that. And when you take that away, where these guys are down on one knee with the runner on third, the winning run on third base, and they can't get to that ball. I mean, it's like, did we really just put an emphasis on trying to steal a strike over that run down at third base?
Yeah, because AJ, our manager, he says it the best, in my opinion. It's like you have to be able and okay to lose the World Series based on going knee down with the block. If you aren't okay with losing that, then there's something wrong with you not being confident or having the ability to do it.
That's what we put it. Damn.
I like that. Damn. I like that. And we're
blocking balls to save runs and save 90 feet. And if you can't say the most stressful, biggest run of the game of your life in the seventh game of the World Series to where you're just like, I don't know if I want to do this, then you shouldn't be fucking doing it.
That's what veteran managers, that's how they talk, right? It's all about 90 feet for them. It's if you can save 90 feet, like all these guys, I mean, I'm sure Tony, Buck, AJ, even, like, that's a big thing because, as as Dustin said, like 90 feet is huge. From first to second, now you're in scoring position. That's a whole different beast. From second to third, now you're one pitch in the dirt that squeaks away. Now it's a run. So, there is value. And again, like some of the stuff I think is good. I like I said, I just try to take as much information in as I could. But there is a lot of – there is going to be a lot of criticism and a lot of downfall for the one knee down stuff. Yeah, I think it'll come back. It'll shift back at some point, though.
Well, the numbers will show something. Dustin, I know you got to get going. We appreciate you coming on. We got to have you back on soon so just we can talk some BS. But it was, like, really interesting in how – you shared with us like what goes on in the catching world right now.
Really quick before we let him go. How awesome was watching Miggy hit 3,000?
Yeah.
Dude, it was I almost got choked up seeing him and his family and stuff because I don't, like, honestly, it might never happen again the way baseball's going. 500 homer, see again, 600 maybe, but like the 3,000 hit aspect, like that's not going to be done for a long time. So that was special.
Yeah, that was cool.
No, that's freaking awesome.
Dustin, what about this kid right here? How many hits he got?
How many what?
How many hits that guy got right there?
Not enough, I'll tell you that.
Picture of Dustin Garneau at Cal State Fullerton. I heard you had a nickname when you were at Fullerton. What was it?
Yeah, Drago. It's a good one. I had the longer hair back then, so I was all spiked up. That was Jason Gill. He's at SC now. He's the one who gave it to me.
There he is.
I love it.
Yeah, so next time you come on the podcast in a couple of weeks, we're going to have all kinds of pictures of you looking good with Drago, and I'll find one from your Little League days, your San Pedro days. We'll get going. We'll have more fun the next time you come
on. He will, too, dude. He will. He's mayor of Carson, so he will go in
the boat. I thought I saw Carson.
Everything.
Yeah, you know, I saved the Carson hat for a little bit, you know. So it's all right, though. My kids go to school in San Pedro. I know the good stuff. We'll go to Busy Bee. We'll take care of you, man.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Yeah. Thanks, Dustin, for coming on. And hopefully we see you out here in L.A., man. We'll be sure. Yelling, talking shit to you if we go down.
We need tickets, man. Come on. Get away.
Hey, this is why they brought you on.
Yeah, man. We need tickets.
Field passes.
We have the dugout.
I can do BP passes.
All right. Go catch that bus, man. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
All right, Dustin.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yeah. Good kid, man. Good guy. Good kid. He's 34 years old, but I remember reading about him when he was like in 10th grade here in the South Bay.
Hey, man, what a bunch of nuggets he just gave us there, though. Like, crazy. Like, you know, because he takes us into the mind of what's going on right now. And again, we're not in this podcast bashing any of it because that's not what we're going to do. Again, it's important to have information, but it's the way that it's being used, and you know, him talking about the one knee thing, you know, and what AJ said to him. Totally, I'm sure you 100% agree with that, right? I mean, it's the state of baseball where we're at with it right now.
It's interesting because, like I said, I've had the ability to learn all the different styles, just kind of where my career path took me, and like now doing lessons for like younger kids and high school kids. Like, it's interesting because there are some kids that, like, whether it's a body type, athleticism, whatever that is, some kids pick up and actually do well off of the one knee. And then there's some kids who have no chance to catch off the one knee. So like, I think it is more like specialized. And like with some of my catchers that are down on a knee right now, like they actually block very well. And this is high school baseball. And these dudes can't throw it in a 20-inch hallway. Like, they have no shot. But like, they still do block. Once you learn the mechanics, it's a little bit different. But to Dustin's point of like what AJ said, like, you got to be willing to lose games or you can't do it, period. Like, that's black and white. That's not up for debate. And I think that is the debate of like, well, it's okay if we have two pass balls and it costs us a run because we're going to steal X amount of strikes, which actually equals 3 wins for the season. So, like, the risk for reward is – that's what they're all trying to figure out.
Yeah, and AJ being AJ Hinch, the manager of the Detroit Tigers. Yeah, and like I said, that was kind of different from what we normally do on the podcast, but I said it to you guys before. Like, let's ask them what's going on because the position is just being so scrutinized and it's – evolving before our eyes. And totally, like I said, 2 years ago you were doing this, learning it, and now everybody's doing it. And you know, it's like I said, we're not coming on here to be like back in the day bashing. It's more of like, let's evolve and find out, ask the questions of why they're doing it. Because if the best players in the world are doing it, there's a reason they're doing it.
And he said it best too about that rookie pitcher. Again, it's little things that these guys are able to read. I'm talking about catchers, little things that they're able to read. This guy keeps shaking to the same side. And it's like for the rookie pitcher, he's a deer in headlights, man. It's his debut. He doesn't even know what he's doing. When Dustin asked him, he didn't know what he was doing. So it takes like Josh said, it takes a veteran catcher, and that's what veteran catchers do. Like I'm sure Dustin said, "Hey man, follow me. I got you." When a catcher says that to you, even as a veteran pitcher, you watch it with Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina, and it's like, "I got you, dude. Don't worry." And you just sit back and you're like, whatever he puts down. When my catchers, you know, that caught me, they put something down. It was like, all right, I trust them. They see the footwork. They're reading the hitter. They're looking up at the hitter, waiting to throw down a sign, and they're saying, all right, trust me right here. Because when you do shake, again, like Josh said, they're always right. When you do shake and you get hit, they come in the dugout and they say, hey, what did I fucking tell you?
Well, no. It's less. No, come on, Rick. No, we don't hold an ego. But like to Rick's point, like yes, like there's a method to what we do and how we call a game, right? Like that's why I'm it's an art. I meant to mention of like the information and data is wonderful. It's all the same stuff that we've all had for the last 15 years or so. But like the one thing that I have a hard time with is like, don't tell me definites, right? Like, don't tell me like, just keep throwing the guy breaking balls in the dirt and eventually he'll swing. Like there might be something different that I saw. And I think that's like, that's the part of the game that is now being missed because the wristbands do give you definites. And now we have the wristbands with the pitch come like, holy shit. Why don't we just have the analytical guy just call it from the dugout to everybody's ear and say, fastball away, change up, down and in. Like, why don't we just do that and really fucking save some time?
And it's true what Josh said. We have had this data. You know, obviously it's different. We used to do our own data. It was like we went out and did our own notes and stuff like that, where we found out the cold zones, the hot zones and stuff like that, the last 10 games, the last 5 games. All that good stuff, but now obviously it's even more magnified. And for me, like Josh said, like if I saw a hot zone on a guy on a certain pitch, well, that's my best pitch. I'm gonna throw it. You know, like I'm not just gonna shot. I'm gonna pick my spots. Like let's say, you know, again, Miguel Cabrera. Let's say his hot zone's down and away, and don't throw him a changeup. Well, shit, my changeup moves a lot. I can't just say I'm not gonna throw it. It's the catcher's gonna know when I should throw it and how to set it up, and that being the key word, set up. Like that's what pitching has always been about for me, setting guys up, not relying on, the book says that I shouldn't throw this pitch. Well, no shit. Like I gotta set up this pitch somehow, some way. I've navigated through games, with two pitches. And the third pitch kind of being a big question mark. And I've gotten deep into games. Again, I'm not tooting my own horn or anything like that. But it's possible, again, with the help of the catcher and him guiding you. And Dustin obviously said a good point. Like the relationship that you're able to build with these guys is just will get thrown out the window.
Man, this is fun. I liked hearing from Dustin and like just, you know, we're all baseball fans and we want to know what's going on. And I guess because I'm getting tired of the, well, this is what we used to do. Well, you know what? What we used to do isn't working. It's evolved. Yeah. Instead of complaining about it, ask why. You know, things evolve. And like I said, it's fascinating.
Adapt to it. You adapt to it. Again, you adapt it to a certain type. Yeah. You adapt it to your game. Obviously, you don't make it all about the game. Yeah. And I feel like when we first started this podcast, Beto, you know, when we did it, our first episode in Arizona, Brandon Morrow came on the show and he was talking about like how he liked having all the camera angles and seeing the stuff coming out of hand. And it's crazy from that point that we started that podcast to what it's evolved to what it is now. The catching position, the pitching position, pitch calm. You know, Josh mentioning the bases getting bigger and Dustin saying that you're only allowed to pick off 3 times. And dude, like what?
I didn't
like,
know that one.
That part, I'm like, what the fuck are we doing? What are we doing?
Well, look at the podcast. We started off having to be in the same room. Now we got 3 different locations. We've had guys all over the world, whatever it is. And the pod. We have stickers now. I mean, just going to Australia, I sent one the other day. So we've evolved. You can evolve. Let's go.
Evolve, but at the same time, like, you still stay true to yourself.
Exactly.
And what you believe in. Again, I love what Dustin said of that, what AJ Hinch said, you know, about the running on third base. Like, if you're comfortable enough to lose a game, then, you know, go ahead. But obviously, every catcher is going to say no. Like, no, like, we can't let that guy score in game 7 of the World Series to lose the World Series. Like, you're going to do everything to block that ball.
Yeah. We totally changing subjects here. We had a road trip last week. We had a field trip. We went to watch the Braves take on the Dodgers, sitting in front row. And
our guy, George Pulis, he hooked it up, JT.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I saw
big
I saw George. I saw Jeff. I saw Sal.
Fasano. What a beauty. Time.
What a beauty. Yeah. I told you. What a beauty.
Yeah.
Yeah. They turned around and they're like, hey. What's up, guys? But yeah, no, it was cool. It was cool. We got to watch a great matchup in Walker Buehler against Max Fried. Max Fried took a perfect game into the sixth, I think.
Yeah.
Just two awesome, awesome arms. That would be a fun matchup to watch. Yeah. Walker Buehler is one of my favorites to watch pitch.
Yeah, and threw a complete game last night. Complete game for Walker Buehler.
Yeah.
He's a motherfucker on the mound, man, and you love him.
And in the clubhouse and everything, he's edgy. One of my favorite teammates.
Yeah, that was good. We had a
really.
Yeah, awesome.
Is he edgy like that too on the off the field?
Oh, he's beautiful.
Yeah,
he's beautiful. I just high strung, just wound tight.
Really,
it's great. You know, it's crazy because I was watching. You know how they do that Sportsnet All Access, Beto?
The backstage one.
Or backstage, yeah. And they asked Kershaw about it, like, him mentoring Walker, and he's like, actually, no, I haven't done any of it. I don't need to. Like, like, the media has taken this and ran away with it. Like, I don't need to mentor him. He's his own person, and I don't need to tell him anything. Like, and I just, you know, it's funny to me how, like, oh yeah, like, Clayton Kershaw's mentoring, and I love how Clayton came out and said, no, man, like, he's his own person. I don't need to, like, guide him through this. He knows what to do.
Hey, let me tell you, he knows, from a pitching perspective, grip shapes, deliveries, like, mechanics of pitching, this dude is in tune. Like, I've talked pitching with him a lot. We've talked a lot of different things of pitching, and, like, watching him throw his bullpens, how passionate he is and how perfection. I mean, he reminds me of, like, a perfectionist, and what all the top tier guys in the big leagues do. That's Walker Buehler, and that's why he's at the top. That's why he can throw CGs and opening day starts and all that.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt.
You know what he reminds me of? Obviously, he didn't throw as hard when I played with them. Walker throws 95, 98, 99, but Doc Halliday, the exact same, like, very meticulous about the delivery.
That's right.
About the routine. And the way they go about it, you know, they're gonna go out there and be and they're in their mind, they should be going a complete game every outing, and that was Doc Halliday's mentality every time he took them out, and even his bullpens, dude, like, he cannot be bothered on his bullpen. It's almost, his bullpens were almost game days for him, and it's like, you couldn't talk to him, you couldn't, like, you'd go out there and you sit and you watch him, and you're like, oh my goodness, like, this guy did not miss a spot. And even if he missed, he was pissed. You know, if it was like an inch or two, and like, that's how meticulous he was about his bullpen and his work day and his play catch. I remember the first time I played catch with him, dude, I was nervous as shit. He hit me in the chest every time, and, you know, I'm left-handed.
He even balls at his ankles.
Oh, dude. And like, yeah, like, and I remember our pitching coach, Brad Arnsberg, at the time. He's like,
Arnie.
Yeah, he's just like, it's just Roy fucking Halliday, bro. Hit him in the chest, dude. I was like, and I was a rookie, dude. So I was like, you know, you start guiding the ball and you're like, and Doc is just laughing, dude. He's like, don't worry about it, man. And I'm like, dude, like, you know, it was, to me, it was obviously nobody played catch with them other than Brad Arnsberg. But when we were throwing a bullpen early for something because we had something to do, I was playing catch with them. So yeah, it was a little nerve wracking. But yeah, those guys were like, I think one day, I think they said he would try and throw bullpens blindfolded, I think, or close his eyes just to kind of feel his delivery and just shit like that. You're just like, I mean, come on, man. Like, I'm trying to throw strikes with my eyes open. You're over here closing your eyes.
Yeah.
No, but that was the beauty. And those guys are very rare. That's why I always say, man, like, people, enjoy the shit out of Clayton Kershaw, because you're probably never going to see that ever again. You know what he's doing, and you know, obviously Walker's well on his way, but like, enjoy those guys, enjoy their body of work and what they're able to do. Clayton's still doing it at a high level right now, and it's like, you highly, highly respect that, man. And again, I enjoy that aspect of it, watching these guys go out there and do their thing.
I will say this, though, and not to kiss up to you, Rick, but watching a game with you, because normally when we go to games with you, I'm over there BSing around, not paying attention to games. But this time, because we had such good seats, and we were sitting there with you, asking you what you would throw and what was going on in the situation, it's fascinating to hear somebody who's been at that level explain why you're doing things. And I can't wait to go to a game with you, Tolley, to hear what a catcher's mindset would do when you're that close and what you're going to be doing. That. But Ricky was like,
if you're watching a game, what are you sometimes calling the game?
If I know the pitcher, I do.
Wow.
But other than that, because it's hard. Like Dustin said, though, it's so hard. Calling a game, there's so many pieces that go into it, right? You take the scouting report, you take reading swings, reading takes, all you see something different when you're underneath the hitter. But more importantly, you really have to know how your guy's stuff is working that day and what pitches he has going. And when, so you'll see guys like pop, like, oh, breaking balls. And you're like, wait, why did he just do that? But there could be something that he wants to get to that the second time through, or wants to use it as a put away. There's a lot of different pieces. But when I have a guy that I know, and it's funny because a lot of the times they still pitch how they pitched 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Let me ask you a question, Josh. As a catcher, what's the percentage, like, in a game that you ever doubted a pitch that you put down, that you're like, fuck, I don't know if we should throw this, but I'm going to put it down anyways?
It's happened a few times. I tend to call timeout if I get stuck in between. I've been more in between pitches of like, damn, we could throw another high fastball and get him for a swing and miss, or we could just bury the slider. But he hasn't been able to execute a slider, so let's go high fastball. You get those conversations going in your head versus like, shit, we shouldn't have done that.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And that's exactly what I wanted to know, because it's a thinking game, and you guys are doing most of the thinking for the pitcher. And the pitcher's obviously going to let you know whether he wants to throw it or not, whether he wants to bury the guy and throw that slider, or he's going to trust you and say, all right, I'm going to go with my catcher and what he sees. And Beto, let me tell you this, man, like, nobody's more pissed if you give up a base hit on a pitch that a catcher calls, like, especially if you're ahead in the count, and these guys take it too hard, man. Like, they're like, golly, like, you know what? I should have buried him. And again, you respect them for that, because they do care, and they're back there catching their asses off. And again, like, what Dustin came out, he came out hot, man. And you love that about your catcher and what he's able to bring. Again, a guy that's been, shoot, how many teams? Probably 5, 6 in his career, you know, and he's still doing it. You know, he's a backup, but he's a backup veteran at this point. And a guy that, shoot, AJ Hinch said, here you go, go catch this rookie, go guide him through, and I'm sure he did it for a reason, you know. And they have Tucker Barnhart, who's a great catcher too, you know. But I'm sure he did it for a reason. And shoot, my debut was caught, you know, by none other than Michael Barrett. You know, like, that was who caught my debut, dude. Michael Barrett,
veteran guy.
Yeah, wicked veteran guy.
Super veteran, dude. Michael Barrett. Yeah. Super veteran. Caught with the Padres. Remember, he took a foul ball off the face, like, broke his whole face or his own nose. Michael Barrett, yeah. And he's the one that punched AJ Pierzynski when he was
at home plate. Yeah.
At home plate. Yeah. Yeah. And he was hardly playing. And all he said to me, I remember bits and pieces. All he said was like, trust me, this afternoon, kid. Go that's have it? A good one. And that's it, dude. And dude, I don't think I shook once. And you know, obviously, I'm in Miggy Cabrera's book as far as base hits, because he did get a base hit. He got more than a few base hits off of me, but so I contributed to those 3,000. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Hey, but glad to help. Glad to help, bro.
That's one way to find in the history book.
You're welcome.
All right, here you go, Michael Barrett. I just Wikipedia'd him. This is how salty a vet he was. He started his career with the Expos at 18. And he played for the Honolulu Sharks, the West Palm Beach Expos, the Shorebirds. Then he turned pro in 1998. So, yeah, he his last appearance, 2009, April 17, 2009, for the Blue Jays. Was that your debut, Rick?
When was my debut? Yeah.
April 9th, dude.
April 9th. You got released after the game?
No, dude. You know what happened? Shoot, it's kind of shitty the way it went down. He went up for a pop-up or a wild pitch, and he went chasing the ball, and he went into the opposing team's on deck circle, and he slipped on the donut or something, and he landed on his shoulder, and I think he like dislocated his shoulder.
He tore a muscle in his right shoulder attempting to retrieve a wild pitch that day and never got back to the big leagues.
Yeah.
Holy that's crap.
That's how it ended, man, for him. But yeah, he caught my debut. Like Rod Barajas was our main catcher. And he caught but Michael Barrett caught my debut, dude. And we had a good game.
Wow, that's a crazy way for your big league, because he went down to the AAA, tried to rehab and never could do anything. He was released and never went back. Yeah.
Broke his face too, dude. And who's with the Padres when he broke his face on an attempted bunt or a swinging, he swung or something. And he showed us pictures. He had to have reconstructive face surgery. Dude, he showed us the pictures of his surgery with his face off.
That's sick.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He's the catching coordinator now for the Nationals. Let's get him on. I want to hear him. That's got some good stories.
Oh, dude. Yeah. I'm still friends with him on, dude, out of all places, Facebook. So yeah, I'm gonna reach out to him. Be like, I'm gonna ask him if he wants to come on it. And
Ricky's gonna hit him up on MySpace.
The catching coordinator with the Nationals. I'd love to hear how Ricky acted on his major league debut.
Cheer.
We've heard Ricky's side. I want to hear quiet the catcher tell the truth,
man. I was quiet as shit. I was so scared, man. I remember my legs shaking, but yeah, that's a topic for another day.
Change it up. Let's get a little shout out to Joel Sanchez Berlingeri in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Got his sticker. He posted it. Appreciate you, Joel. Also, this is pretty cool. Legacy Height baseball team here in Southern California. They had a couple of players that went to Ricky's camp, Tully. They have committed to play Division III baseball. Congratulations to Eric Ariola and also Anthony Cortez. They've committed to Medeo College, home of the Mavericks, in Buffalo, New York.
All right, down the road, baby.
Yeah. So two kids going to be leaving the L.A. area, Legacy High School Tigers, a good program, and they're going to be going and representing for their neighborhood, Anthony Cortez and Eric Ariola. So congratulations to them. Get an opportunity to see the other side of the country and also continue their education at Medeo College in Buffalo, New York. So congratulations to those gentlemen. Yeah, so if you guys need any help, Tolly's down the road. He'll let you know. If you need to come shovel some snow, Tolly, we got two guys for you.
Yeah, let's go. I need some help.
Toughen them up, dude. Toughen them up.
There it is. That's right. No, all right, so they wouldn't last. They're from Los Angeles. You guys won't even come out on a plane to see me. No. How do you think they feel?
Well, but those kids are young and full of energy and life. They'll do it.
Okay, good. Me? All right.
No. All right, Tolly, let's wrap this thing up. Do we have a Tolly today?
We've had such a good podcast today. I don't want to damper it with any nonsense or any negativity. I feel like I've been thinking, like, I've been negative on all fronts, right? Crash my car, parents, travel ball parents, these parents, coaches, whatever. I don't want to damper it anymore. I want to be a little more positive. When I have a rant, you'll hear my rant. And it may happen in the middle of the podcast. But I think I should just take a week off from my rants.
Hey,
go on with the positive Josh Tolley attitude.
Right, here we go. Hey, but remember, Tolley time doesn't have to be a rant. It could be anything you want. So, give us a story about Kumbaya. Something about marshmallows. What do we got, Tolley? Give us a few good Tolley time.
Is it still snowing over there, Josh?
Tonight, we get snow tonight. It's rain, 81 yesterday. But we got a few projects on the farm. This will be a good little topic. We're going to fix the pond house, a little tongue and groove. As my father-in-law says, when my mother-in-law can decide what kind of tongue and groove she wants on it, then we'll put it on. We're finishing up the schoolhouse. I'll send you guys some pictures. My father-in-law has done a wonderful job in the schoolhouse. From, you remember when we were putting the roof on? Was that 2 years ago or last year? It is freaking awesome inside.
All right.
So
this is
that's a kumbaya moment.
This is Soleil yesterday. This is how nice it was out here, dude.
Oh man.
Oh, thanks.
Full-on bathing suit.
Well, let me go. Yeah, sweet. Let me go put on my parka and I'm gonna head outside.
All right. As always, thank you guys for listening to the podcast. Ricky, I'll see you tomorrow. We got an early tea time. It's going to be cold, like 70.
Hey, my swing is in shambles right now.
Oh, hey, totally. I'm on.
Not looking forward to it.
I'm coming for Rick.
I can't wait. Get his money. Get that money.
Yeah.
Deep pocket.
Thanks to Dustin Garneau. As always, subscribe to the podcast. We appreciate you guys. We'll talk to you next Tuesday, another edition of the Let's Go Ricky Roll podcast.
See you, boys.
See ya.